Jace here, everybody. I just want to apologize. I know this episode is a little late. I normally like to have the episodes out at 6 a.m. Eastern at the latest, but there was a couple other books this week that I really, really wanted to cover, and unfortunately, I wasn't able to get review copies, so that's why this one's a little late. Hope you can excuse it. Thanks a lot. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a new Comics Wednesday episode, so I'm going to be talking about a few of the books that I've read that come out today, and I'll also be mentioning a few of the books that I haven't read that are coming out today that I think might be of interest to you. But before we get into that, I just wanted to talk about a little bit of news. I know that a lot of the listeners out there are fans of Valiant Comics, and I know there's been a lot of upheaval lately, and in fact, on the last Valiant Sunday, Jesse from the Valiant Fans Forums and I talked about kind of the state of Valiant and where we saw it headed. I mentioned a few possible replacements for Editor-in-Chief. One that I didn't mention was actually one that I kind of suspected just based on some of the announcements and kind of the way the breeze was blowing, if you know what I mean. And that's Joseph P. Illidge. And in fact, he was named as executive editor on Monday. That was announced by Valiant. So I know Joseph. I've met him a couple times. He's very professional, very passionate about comics. He's a real stand-up guy. And I think it's about the best news that Valiant could have hoped for. And I'm very anxious to see where it goes from here. So I'm actually hoping to have Joseph on the show soon. I know a lot of you Valiant fans are used to hearing a lot of news from Valiant, and that hasn't been the case most recently. So I'm hoping to get Joseph and Mel Kylo on, the new director of marketing, to talk a little bit about themselves and where they are coming from and what their hopes are for Valiant in the future. So I'll certainly let you know when I hear back from them. Also in some Valiant news, Aaron Shonka, who is the producer and the director of the Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe web series, is going to be on the next episode of Valiant Sunday, which is Sunday, April 15th. He wanted to come on now that the official release date has been announced and just talk a little bit about the web series. So we have that to look forward to. Also upcoming, just to talk about a few of the other things, we're going to have Robert Venditti on soon to talk about his new Hawkman project. And we should have J.T. Kroll on within the next few weeks also to talk about his latest project, which is Journey from Aspen Comics. So that's kind of a little preview of things to come. We're super busy over here at the Comic Source trying to bring you all the content we can, and we really appreciate all the support. Numbers are up, and again, if there's something you want us to review, something you want us to talk about on the show, or you just want to reach out and let us know how we're doing, you can always reach us at thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Any of those places are great spots to get a hold of me. All right, so now on to some of the books for this week. Usually I save my favorite book for last, but I'm going to do a little bit differently this time. I'm going to talk about my favorite book of the week first, and it's Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. The creative team, it's written by Robert Venditti. The art is by Ethan Van Sciver, and the colors are by Jason Wright. So I have to start out first by saying that the cover is really, really cool. The main cover, I think there's also a variant cover by Tyler Kirkham that is black and white. I haven't seen an up-close version of that yet. So, but Tyler Kirkham's a pretty good artist, so I'll try to check that out myself when I get to the comic shop tomorrow. But the regular cover from Rafa Sandoval with this Dark Star armor is amazing. And this is Dark Star Rising Part 1. So recently, before the Zod storyline that we had, the House of Zod, we had a storyline with the controllers having returned. Longtime readers of Green Lantern will remember the controllers. Maybe if you're a Legion of Superhero fan, they're basically kind of an offshoot of the Guardians of the Universe. And they just took a kind of a different path. You know, the Guardians created the Manhunters first to be their police force. And then when they realized that the fact that they didn't give them emotions or allow them to have emotions kind of came back to bite them in the butt, they created the Green Lantern Corps. Well, the controllers had a bit of a different take, and they created the Dark Stars. And they're similar to Green Lanterns in that they're a peacekeeping force or a kind of a police force or a, you know, martial force, but they're much more, as the name implies, controlling, as I said, they were created by the controller. So we haven't seen them in the DC universe in a while, but again, it's just one of the things that Robert Venditti has done throughout his Green Lantern run. And the longer this run goes, the more people I hear talking about it as being a classic run. Once Venditti's done, it'll be talked about as a real era, a real run, right? A kind of a big chunk of Green Lantern story and mythos that are all tied together, kind of like when people talk about, you know, George Perez, his Wonder Woman run that started in 88, or John Byrne's Superman that started in 86. So, you know, it's a big, long chunk of story. Peter David Hulk is another one. So a big, long chunk of story, and I've said this many, many times about Robert Venditti. The thing that I love most about what he's done with Green Lantern is he's taken a character that's been around for so long with so many ideas, and he's managed to turn a lot of these ideas on their head and make them new and fresh again, almost to the point you wonder, well, how come nobody's done that before, right? Well, this issue, Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps 42, is just another prime example of that. It's Venditti taking the Dark Stars, taking that concept and turning it on its head. And again, it makes perfect sense what he does. And it's so awesome. He was my writer of the year last year, just because I felt like he really took a step forward, and he manages to make the dialogue fun and witty. He manages to meld these big ideas and as I said, flip old ideas on their head. And he just makes comics fun. They're so fun to read. They're so entertaining. And teamed up with Ethan Van Sciver, who this is the best work I've seen from him in a while. Sometimes for me, Van Sciver's art seems to be a little overly detailed, especially when he draws aliens, like when he draws Sinestro's face, for example. It's like, whoa, too many lines. And he kind of got away from that a little bit in this issue. You know, he could have gone overboard with drawing the controllers, but he didn't. He kind of held back. And so I think it's a perfect melding of some of Van Sciver's best work with these crazy ideas of Venditti to kind of reinvent the Dark Stars. And I almost got like a Borg vibe from Star Trek The Next Generation, which is my favorite Star Trek. And again, great banter, great dialogue, and moments that just make you go, oh, like I'm reading the comic and I'm talking to myself out loud, like, holy crap, that just happened. That's awesome. And you kind of halfway through, when you see what goes down, and you know, sometimes I give you some of the lines, that some of my favorite lines. This time I'm going to refrain from doing that, because I want you to pick up this book for yourself, because that's how good it is. But just remember how I mentioned that it reminded me of the Borg, and you'll know what I mean. But about halfway through, you get this idea of what's going to happen, based on some conversations that some different characters have had and what you see of the Dark Stars. And you're like, you get this sense of dread, right? Like this sense of, oh no, I know it's coming. And then sure enough, it comes to pass. And you just think to yourself, man, the stuff has really hit the fan now, right? And I cannot wait for the next issue. I cannot wait. This is one of those times when I love the fact that this is a bi-weekly book, because I only have to wait another week, and then the following week I'll get another issue of Hal Jordan the Green Lantern Corps. So man, oh man, oh man. I don't know how long this story arc is. I want to say it's 5 or 6 issues, but this may be my favorite story arc of the year, just based on this incredible start. That's saying a lot, because there's been a lot of good books come out this year already. I know we're barely a third of the way into April, but so many candidates for that storyline or favorite storyline. So this is a contender for sure. It's amazing. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention The Colors by Jason Wright. He does a really solid job on all the Green Lantern books all the Green Lantern issues, I should say, regardless of which artist is on it, whether it's Van Sciver or Rafa Sandoval or V. Ken Marion. He does a great job. He doesn't go overboard with the colors. It gives it a little bit of that space feel with them not being too bright. And a lot of oranges in this issue, a lot of kind of yellowish tones, which suits the Dark Stars if you've seen them before. So again, favorite issue of the week. Granted, I haven't read everything, but this was amazing. It was so good. In fact, I think when I read it the first time, I immediately had to send out a tweet talking about how here goes Venditti again, taking something old and making it new, flipping it on its head. So absolutely incredible. And yeah, my favorite issue of the week. All right, up next, I'm going to talk about a book that we've been kind of waiting for quite a while, actually. It may have gotten delayed twice, once for sure, but maybe twice. And that is Immortal Men. So written by James Tynan IV with quite a bit of input from Jim Lee. The pencils are by Jim Lee and Ryan Benjamin. The inks are by Scott Williams and Richard Friend. And the colors are by Jeremiah Skipper and Alex Sinclair. So part of the reason this got delayed was Jim Lee, you know, his duties as publisher, and then another project came up that he had to be involved in, plus Action Comics 1000 with the whole Brian Michael Bendis thing and Bendis getting sick and things got shuffled around. So much to Jim Lee's chagrin, he was not even able to finish all the pencils on the first issue. So it's a real shame. I know that Jim had said he had a blast kind of developing the characters and kind of plotting this book with James Tynan IV. And he was sad to see it go, but you know, that's the way the priorities are at the publisher sometimes. You know, Jim Lee is arguably the biggest artist in comics these days. So obviously DC is going to want him where he's going to get the most visibility. And, you know, honestly, once a book is late and it loses some momentum, it's, you know, not that I wouldn't want Jim Lee to stay on this book, but, you know, once a book is late, it definitely loses some momentum. So I think if you look at the creative team, you know, pencils, Jim Lee, and, you know, there's two pencilers mentioned, there's two inkers mentioned, there's two colors. So it's probably, you know, Jim Lee with Scott Williams inking him with their longtime collaborator on colors, Alex Sinclair. And then there's some other pages that are Ryan Benjamin, inked by Richard Friend, and those pages are colored by Jeremiah Skipper. So all that being said, I didn't notice like huge swings in the art from page to page. It didn't bother me at all. I don't necessarily think that Ryan Benjamin normally has a real similar art style to Jim Lee, but you know, I talked to Ryan recently at WonderCon, and he specifically mentioned in the interview his ability to kind of mimic other art styles. Like he's able to kind of change his style to suit what the needs are of the book. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if he kind of did his version of Jim Lee, like his take, like, let me see if I can draw like Jim Lee. And honestly, I again, didn't notice any big swings in art style. I thought the art throughout the book was really solid. One thing that stood out was the camera perspective, kind of the layouts within panels. Different angles, moving around a lot, which is kind of a trademark of Jim Lee. So again, Benjamin did a good job for whichever pages he did of kind of mimicking that style of moving the camera around, panning it around. You know, we get some angles where we're looking up from below, some angles where we're looking down from above. So again, it really helped to make all the art in the book seamless. As far as the story itself, so again, go back and listen to my interview with Ryan Benjamin from WonderCon. He talks a little bit about what the book's all about. And we talk in the interview about just how fun it is that Tynan and Lee came up with this idea for a book where it's all about this secret corner of the DC universe that hasn't been explored or talked about much. we're going to see some characters that we've seen before. Vandal Savage, the Immortal Man, obviously, because this is a book about people that live forever, about immortals. But there's a lot more to those characters than we've been led to believe. I think there are five houses of immortals, and they each kind of have different ideas and, you know, the politics between those different houses and which house is dominant and which house is on the bottom. All that kind of stuff's going to play out. So I actually, as I've gotten older and kind of more sophisticated, as far as my reading taste, I guess, I suppose that happened in my late teens, perhaps. But I don't know that I would have appreciated a book like this when I was much younger. So I would say that it's aimed at a little bit more sophisticated of a reader, because I think a reader like that will kind of appreciate the politics a little more. We don't get a whole lot of those political machinations in this book, but you can tell that they're coming. And that's not to say that I don't think a young reader would get a lot out of it as well. It's just that, you know, they're going to enjoy it at the more of the surface level with all the action and the super cool characters and the great art, which is totally fine. But for me, I'm looking forward to all that. Plus, I'm looking forward to the kind of the political maneuvering that I expect to see in this book. I think James Tynan is a great writer. I think he's up and coming. I think not enough people know his name. And I think he can handle that kind of political book really well. And I don't know. I mean, there's some politics going on in Detective Comics. I guess that's the closest thing to kind of a, you know, large cast of characters and feelings and relationships and the politics of all that kind of coming through. So it's kind of similar, but this is on a whole nother level, because we're talking about beings who've been alive for thousands and thousands of years and, you know, a long history of infighting between those houses and everything. And so I think it's going to be a really, really incredible book. So the main character is named Caden. And as Ryan mentions in our interview, he's kind of discovering that he has these powers, that he is in fact an immortal, and he's destined to save everyone else, to save Earth, to save the planet. But he doesn't necessarily know that. He just knows that he's having these dreams that he's been running for his life. And in the first issue, we see that he's being pursued, and we also see that there's another side that's looking to save him, because they know the prophecy that he's kind of the chosen one, so to speak. So in that way, it's not the most, you know, original of ideas, but there's a lot here to mine. There's a great art by Lee and Benjamin, and some really cool characters. Infinite Woman looked pretty awesome. The Hunt, I think, is the name of one of the other, for lack of a better term, bad guys or antagonist. We see appearance by the Batman Who Laughs. For me, I think Ghost Fist might be my favorite. He just looks really, really cool, especially when he's using his powers. I mean, he almost has a Phantom Stranger look about him. You know, he's got the trench coat, the domino mask, and the fedora. And when he uses his powers, his like whole face and body kind of turns greenish. And it just looks super, super cool. There's another character named Reload. There's another one named, what's this person's name? Timber. That's right. Timber. So they all look super cool. Like, great designs by Jim Lee. But I'm saying for now, this is subject to change, because I haven't learned a whole heck of a lot about the individual characters yet, but just based on the visuals and the cool name, Ghost Fist, I'm going with him as my favorite so far, but I reserve the right to change that at any moment. But Immortal Man number one, I definitely recommend it. It's part of the new age of heroes. I know a lot of you were probably looking forward to this as well, based on the fact that Jim Lee was supposed to be the regular artist. So I understand if you decide not to pick it up, but the first issue is mostly Jim Lee art, I think. I mean, it sure looks like it. So give it a shot. And if you find that you enjoy all the art from page to page to page, then go ahead and pick up issue two also. And maybe you'll be pleasantly surprised at what Ryan Benjamin brings to the table. I know he's really excited for this title and to be working on it. So Immortal Man number one, really, really cool. All right, the next book I'm going to mention is also from DC. It's also one of the New Age of Heroes books, and I've talked about issue one. I've talked about issue 2, and I'm enjoying it so much, I decided I should go ahead and talk about issue 3. So it's Sideways from writer Justin Jordan with some assist by Dan Didio. And the art in this one is handled by Kenneth Roquefort with colors by Daniel Brown. So this is one of those New Age of Heroes books that still has the art, same artist that started. I mean, I know it's only 3 issues in, but Kenneth Roquefort, I'll talk about the art first. His art is absolutely amazing. You know, Jaden's favorite artist. I know some other listeners out there. Shout out to Robert. Roquefort's his favorite artist as well. And actually ran into Robert at WonderCon, and he showed me this incredible sketch by Roquefort, color like bust, maybe like probably from around the waist up, of Mr. Miracle. And man, was it amazing. It was so, so good. Like, I mean, I had to take out my phone and take a picture of it. It was so awesome. So yeah, Robert works at one of the local comic shops here in Phoenix. So hope you're listening, Robert. That's an amazing piece, man. And I hope you're picking up Sideways too, because it's been a lot of fun. I know that a lot of the New Age of Heroes books, some people have complained, they're just ripping off Marvel. Well, Marvel's not really doing it right with their characters right now. You know, Hulk is not even Bruce Banner. So they, you know, DC's taking advantage. They're putting out Damage. Marvel's not producing a Fantastic Four title, although they finally announced that they're coming back soon. So why not do a Fantastic Four adventure type title and call it The Terrifics and put Mr. Terrific and Plastic Man on there? Hey, it's been great for the first 2 issues, so I don't really have a problem with it. Sideways is similar to the early issues of Spider-Man in a way, or at least that's the feel they're trying to capture. So it's a teen hero trying to make his way in the world with these powers and trying to do good and help and a little bit trying to get famous. You know, it is a modern story, so social media and, you know, YouTube and all that. But he doesn't always make the right choices. You know, he is just a kid. He is learning. But he's got the witty banter, just like Spider-Man did. And he's got a costume that's – it doesn't look anything like Spider-Man as far as coloring, but it is like just one big pair of like long johns basically, or a leotard or spandex, or whatever you want to call it. So there is a similarity there. But it's a whole lot of fun. Justin Jordan, much like James Tynan, is a writer I think that doesn't get enough credit. You know, he's doing Backways for Aftershock, which is really an incredible book. He did, I'm drawing a blank on it. He did a Vertigo book that was really, really good. Oh, it's going to drive me crazy. And when I had him on the show, he talked about it. Let me look it up real quick. But that was a really, really good title as well. So, Savage Things. That's what it was. I knew it started with an S. Yeah, Savage Things, Vertigo last year was an 8-issue mini that was really amazing. So again, I think he's an artist or a writer rather that doesn't get quite enough credit. So this issue shows Sideways, although he's hurt, he met another relatively new superpowered being. And we learned in the course of the issue that she got her powers during all that crazy Speed Force stuff that was happening in Flash at the beginning of the Rebirth Flash run from Joshua Williamson. But we find out some other things about her as well that don't really make her a hero. I don't think they necessarily make her a villain as well. I think that faced with the situation she's faced with, a lot of us may have made the same choices she makes. But be that as it may, Sideways is forced to stop her, and stop her he does. And it's kind of the first time that he's really had some success with having things go his way. It doesn't go exactly his way. And that's what kind of makes it fun and makes it a little bit realistic. And I'm just really digging this title, and I hope Roquefort stays on it for a long time. I don't know that he will, because again, he's an artist who's really in demand, so it wouldn't surprise me to see DC take him off of this once he does kind of the first arc or two. But we'll see. We'll see. It's a lot of fun. I really recommend it. It's got some cool moments in it, and I just think much like early Spider-Man, much like early Invincible, this is a book that does a good job of capturing the feel and the tone of a young hero who's kind of has a can't help but have a positive outlook on things and hope things are going to turn out okay. And it's just a whole lot of fun. Just a whole lot of fun, much like the Immortal Men title and the Hal Jordan title that I previously talked about. These are just books that are super entertaining. And at the end of the day, I think that, you know, that's what a comic is supposed to be. It's supposed to be an escape from reality. It's supposed to be fun. And if you haven't read any of Sideways up till now, one thing that's cool about issue 3 is they actually put in, let's see, it's 1, 2, 3. They put in a 4-page recap at the end that kind of tells you what happened, gives you the origin of Sideways, Derek James, and it's got Roquefort art as well, and it just kind of catches you up, so to speak. There's a little bit of new information there as well for readers who have been reading along the whole time. And so I definitely recommend it. One last thing about the art. I love how detailed Roquefort's art is. I love his acting in the characters, his facial expressions. One thing he doesn't mess around with much is panel layouts, or rather page layouts. They're pretty standard. You know, his panels all tend to be, you know, rectangles or squares. And it works for him. I just wonder if we'll see his style evolve at some point to doing a little less traditional panel shapes. So just a thought. All right, the next book I'm going to talk about is Domino from Marvel Comics. This one's written by Gail Simone with art by David Baldone and colors by Jesus Abertov. So Domino is a character that's been around a long time. I want to say she debuted in X-Force number 2, but I may have that wrong. It may have been New Mutants 98, which is also the first appearance of Deadpool. So not exactly an easy book to get your hands on these days unless you want to spend a pretty penny. That being said, this book's enjoyable. You know, it's Gail Simone. She has a real flair for dialogue. Humor that's not over the top and appropriate and at the right level without, you know, ruining the story or affecting the narrative. The humor doesn't feel forced, I guess you'd say. So I'm not that familiar actually with Domino's history, and that was okay. I didn't have a problem following along with the story. Simone does a good job of putting just enough exposition in her story to give you an idea of who Domino is and who her friends are. In this particular issue, we see that she's teamed up with Diamondback and another mutant that goes by the name of Outlaw, and they're basically guns for hire, so to speak. So again, a great job by Gail Simone of introducing all these characters, letting us kind of know what their powers are. It's kind of told in the first person for the most part. The comic is narrated by Domino, so that also helps to flesh out the character and give us a sense of who she is. Also in the midst of all the setup and background and a lot of guest appearances from a lot of other X-Men and X-Men Corner of the Universe people like Deadpool and Dazzler and Colossus, we also see that Domino and her friends, her teammates, go on a mission. And it doesn't quite work out like they expected. And we can see that already the gears are turning and there's a deeper conspiracy going on. And I think Gail Simone is going to be introducing us to some new antagonists and how they tie into Domino's past, because they do seem to know quite a bit about her, has yet to be determined. So as I said, it's an enjoyable issue. As far as that type of a thing, it's a little tired, to be honest. You know, we start a new series and, you know, it's an established character such as Domino, but all of a sudden there are, you know, mysteries in her past that maybe she doesn't even know about, and we're going to discover those along the way. Again, it's a trick, a concept, a plot device, whatever you want to label it, that's been done many, many times. And it would be refreshing in a way to see something a little different. But All that being said, Simone does do a good job of using the device and setting us up and leaving us with a cliffhanger. So it's handled as well as it can be. And again, I think Gail Simone's an incredible writer. I guess I was just looking for a little more originality in the series. So I don't know that I'll be picking up issue two. Again, not to say anything bad about this comic or the X-Men Corner of the Universe. It's just not where my interest lies right now. But I did want to check out Domino number one because, again, it's Gail Simone and I'm a fan of her writing. I think she's an incredible writer, very talented. And I was curious. I as I said, I didn't know much about Domino. So I think if you are an X-Men fan, big X-Men fan, which I admittedly am not, and a Deadpool fan or a Domino fan, you're certainly going to love this book. And if you are any of those things and you think I got it wrong, please let me know. Please let me know. I'd be curious to get another perspective from somebody who is very much invested in this corner of the Marvel Universe. All right, next up we have Gideon Falls number 2 from writer Jeff Lemire. The art is by Andrea Sorrentini and the colors are by Dave Stewart. So this was a really great start last month from Jeff Lemire, as I've come to expect from him. His stories, his narratives are incredibly interesting and incredibly well crafted. And so it's really no surprise, only 2 issues in, Gideon Falls is following that same trajectory. Very compelling story, very well crafted. The pacing, I think, is what really helps sell this comic. It's a horror comic and the suspense is building. I talked a lot when I reviewed the first issue about Sorrentino's art and the sense of foreboding that he gives it. Even though it's in the daytime, a lot of the scenes, he manages to give it a sense of menace and a sense that something's going on. So that was really incredible. This issue kind of steps back from that a little bit. It really moves the story along. We're getting to know some other characters besides Norton, who was the trash collector, if you will, that we met in the first issue, who is going around digging through the trash looking for pieces of this black barn. He does tell his psychiatrist about it in this issue, and that leads to something real interesting at the end that happens. Meanwhile, Father Quinn, who just had been sent to Gideon Falls in issue 1, is not exactly in the best circumstances when this issue starts. And so that sets up some tension and it sets up what happens kind of in the middle of the book with Father Quinn realizing that everything, in as much as it's not as it seemed in the first issue with the black barn appearing and, you know, bad things about to happen, it appears that there are others who know that something is going on in Gideon Falls. And we get a sense of that from several characters in this book. And Father Quinn is not the most likely hero. That's what I'm getting at here. He seems reluctant. He seems to want to be rescued. He doesn't seem to want to get involved. But it also seems like he's already at the very center of the story. So again, very compelling. I love what Lemire is doing here with the setup and with the different pacing. The first issue, as I said, a lot of menace, a lot of foreshadowing, a lot of foreboding. And as I said, this steps back from that a little. We have a few more concrete things that kind of ratchet up the suspense. But again, it's those character moments in the middle that give us clues of a kind of a bigger conspiracy that really are at the heart of issue 2, I feel like. And then the revelation at the end is sufficiently creepy. So it did seem like between issue 1 and issue 2, there was a big, well, not a big jump, but a jump in time. You know, issue 1 ended with Father Quinn finding the body of the woman who'd been murdered. I can't remember her name, but one of the locals there in Gideon Falls. And then issue 2 starts with him at a police station. So again, there's been a bit of a time jump. And I wonder if they'll do that between issue 2 and 3. So Mrs. Tremblay, that was her name. So I wonder if the way issue 2 ends on a bit of a cliffhanger, if we're going to get another little jump, or if issue 3 is going to pick up right where issue 2 left off. I hope we pick up right where issue 2 left off, only because I think that the implications of the ending of issue 2 are more important to the story than Father Quinn finding Mrs. Tremblay. That's just kind of like an event, I feel like, in the first issue that just showed us menace again. You know, going back to the theme of issue 1, showed us that the Black Barn was not a good thing, so to speak. So, but I'm very curious to see what the implications are of the cliffhanger for issue 2. So, again, I know I'm being like really vague, but I really don't want to spoil much because this is such a great story. And I feel like it's one that the more detail I go into and the more I talk about specifically, the less enjoyment you're going to get out of the issue. So I want you guys to go and read it for yourselves. So really, really cool. The last book I'm going to talk about is a book I've been looking forward to for a long time. And I really struggled. I went back and forth between calling this my book of the week or Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps as my book of the week. And Green Lantern Corps I went with, it slightly edged out this book just because I've been enjoying that book so much. And this is only issue 1 of a new series, and it's a bit of setup. And I have a feeling that it's going to get crazy good in a very, very short period of time because it's already really good, really enjoyable. I couldn't put it down. And it's The Dead Hand, number 1, from writer Kyle Higgins. The art is by Stephen Mooney, and the colors are by the incomparable Jordi Belair. So this is a story of a former spy during the Cold War, and he's retired, and he's in this first issue, we're not exactly sure what he is aware of, because there is a complete bombshell at the end of issue 1, something that's revealed that literally had me saying, holy bleep, I didn't see it coming, and it was awesome. You know, I've come to expect great things from Kyle Higgins, and this title really didn't let me down. He does a great job of setting up. This issue is 90% set up, but he does a great job of setting up the story going forward. And with the bombshell reveal that's at the end of issue 1, I really can't wait. It's another one I'm going to have to read as soon as I can get my hands on it. And the setup is interesting. You know, there was a Cold War. There's a character who goes by the name of Carter. What's his last name? Carter Carlson. That's right. And we learned that, as I said, he was a spy for the Americans, did a lot of black bag missions during the Cold War, trying to keep us safe from the Russians, you know, the terrible USSR. And we find that things are not always what they seem. And Carter Carlson discovers that as well. So we don't have a lot of details about all of his missions, but we do know that there's something called the Dead Hand. It seems to be a mission that's at the heart of what's going to be discovered in this story and has a lot to do perhaps with the reveal, the twist at the end of the first issue. We also get some background into Carter's childhood, and it seems, you know, pretty normal, a regular all-American kid. And when he enters the military, the U.S. Spy intelligence community, something's different about him than the usual person that kind of takes that path, I guess you'd say. And that it's hinted at in the issue, but it's not overt. And it probably has to do with Carter's upbringing and the fact that we have hints there that despite the fact that we're told Carter had a normal, quote unquote, childhood, whatever that means, his father did die while he was a relatively young age. And it, again, there are hints there that that affected Carter deeply. So I'm sure that's going to factor into the story as well. The art by Stephen Mooney is absolutely incredible. I think my favorite pages, it's hard to choose, but there's a double page montage that kind of gives us some clues and some hints to some of the missions that Carter went on, even mentions his reservations about his service for his country becoming less and less morally, how shall we say, it becomes more and more morally ambiguous, let's put it that way. The morals of it become less clear as time goes on, which, you know, kind of mirrors U.S. history in a way, and really maybe goes back even further than that. If we look at the history of the world, you know, what's the saying? History is written by the victors, right? So you look back in American history and things like the Cold War and some of the things that were done, conflicts like Vietnam, obviously a lot of moral, I won't even say gray area, just a lot of morally questionable things that were done in the name of democracy and stopping the spread of communism and stuff like that. So it appears that these things started to take their toll on Carter at some point. And again, going back to the loss of his father at an early age, and then we learn about the loss of his mentor in the intelligence community, kind of mirroring the loss of his father. Again, I'm very curious to see how that will be fleshed out by Kyle Higgins. As far as the dialogue and the kind of the scripting of the issue, incredibly well done. I feel like the longer I read Kyle Higgins' work, like the more of his work I read and the more new projects I read, the better he's getting. He's so precise with his language and his scripting and his pacing. And I feel like he's a master at telling the story exactly the way he wants it to be told and evoking the feelings and the emotions. You know, I think some comic book writers, I mean, I'm not trying to disparage anyone, but and I don't want to make light of what they do, but I feel like they almost wing it sometimes. They're like, let's just kind of say it this way, or let's just kind of say it that way. It'll be fun, right? And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, and it oftentimes makes for incredibly interesting stories. But I feel like with Kyle, if I could compare his writing to a painter, let's say, I think that'll work well. So as I was saying, some of the other comic writers, it's like they're doing an impressionist painting, and it doesn't exactly matter if the brush stroke turns out exactly as they expected or the colors are exactly, because it's all just kind of impressionist or abstract, you know, and it kind of turns out like they see in their mind's eye and kind of not, and that's okay because that's art and that's fine. And it's great. Like I said, there are plenty of painters that work that way, masters, you know, like Picasso and Monet and all those guys, where it's more impressionist. It's not, you know, super precise. I feel like with Kyle Higgins, to keep with that painting analogy, every single brushstroke is planned out. It's thought about. It's precise. It goes exactly where it's supposed to go. And you end up with this incredible masterpiece at the end that is well thought out and completely composed and is breathtaking to look at. And you can't help but like want to bring your friends, hey, look at how amazing. Look at the control. Look at the detail. Look at the depth of feeling that it evokes and kind of the depth of story that this is telling. So to me, that's what Kyle Higgins, like the more of his work that I read and seeing things like his recent short film, The Shadow Hours, same thing. Everything is done for a reason. Every little detail is planned out and thought about, and it's absolutely incredible. So, you know, maybe I've talked myself into giving this my book of the week or my co-book of the week. Let me put it to you this way. If you're a fan of the DC Universe, a fan of Hal Jordan, a fan of the Green Lanterns, then certainly pick up Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps 42, because if you're not reading it, it's a book you should be reading, and it's a lot of fun. It's super entertaining. But you don't have to have any history of anything or know any background whatsoever to pick up the Dead Hand number one and be thoroughly immersed in this world and have that holy crap moment at the end like I did. So go and pick it up. It's absolutely incredible. I can't recommend it highly enough. You know, the writing, the story from Kyle Higgins is compelling, and it's got me hooked already. The art by Stephen Mooney is really well done, very evocative of emotion. And the colors by Jordi Belair. I mean, I haven't mentioned Jordi Belair. What can I say? I mean, she's starting to achieve a legendary status. So she's very prolific as a colorist, and she's incredibly adept at creating mood. And not only mood, but also tone. We already get the idea in this story. And this first issue really has almost two chapters to it. You know, we have the background chapter in the past that had a certain tone and feel. And then we get some warmer colors as we come to the present and find out what Carter Carlson is up to in the present day. And so they have very different feels, very different emotions that they kind of evoke. And Belair almost uses two different palettes to differentiate between the two time periods. And so again, she does it effortlessly. And it's something that unless you're looking for it or you're going back through the issue to see what you're going to talk about on a podcast, for example, you might not necessarily notice it. So much more of a cool palette in the first half of the book, which, you know, suits the kind of Cold War era that first half of the book covers, and much more of a warmer palette in the present day. And I should also mention, when Carter Carlson is thinking about his childhood, those tend to be some warmer colors too, because again, he's being nostalgic. He's thinking back to the 60s. So it makes sense that when he thinks about this all-American childhood of his, it would have those warmer colors. So again, great transitions, great use of color to evoke mood and emotion from Jordi Belair. So, all right. And now real quick, I'm going to go down a list of a few other titles you should be looking out for. We've got from Aftershock Comics their Aftershock Anthology hardcover. Also, Animosity Evolution number 5, Brothers Dracul number 1, that Cullen Bunn, the writer, joined me for on Aftershock Monday, thus last week, is on stands today. Also, Cold War number 3 from Christopher Sabala and Hayden Sherman is on your stands. From Boom, we've got RoboCop Citizens Arrest number 1 that I want to mention. From DC, in addition to the 3 that I mentioned, we've also got the Action Comics 80 Years of Superman hardcover, as well as Supergirl number 20 that has a really cool Art Germ variant cover. Over at Image, there is Rose number 10 from writer Meredith Finch that I want to mention, as well as Versus number 3 from Yvonne Brandon and Isad Ribic. Marvel's got Captain America number 700, as well as a new Exiles number 1. Also, Thanos 18 is out today from writer Donny Cates. That's been a really hot title recently. And then finally from Valiant, a couple comics that we mentioned on Valiant Sunday briefly. Bloodshot Salvation number 8 and Ninja K number 6. Okay, once again, I want to thank everyone for joining us as always. Don't forget, for past episodes of the podcast, you can go to lrmonline.com. While you're there, be sure to check out all the other pop culture, movie, TV show content. There's a lot of good stuff there, other podcasts, other articles. So it's a great way to keep up to date with what's going on with your favorite movies and TV shows. Also, twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those platforms. All three places are great spots to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow along with our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.